Sharon, I'm an addict.
Hey, hi, Sharon.
This was kind of last minute. I think I have known Patty since she got clean, since she first came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And what I can say about Patty is that she has the heart of a servant. Does it with a smile on her face. She's open and vulnerable and honest, and she carries a good, clear message of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to turn it over to Patty.
Patty, they said you were a hell of a cook, too.
Mm-hmm.
True that. Hey, family, I'm Patty, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, Patty.
Glad I took my glasses off. That way I can't see your faces. I swear the universe didn't want me to be here today, and I'll just tell you, there's a chain of events that I may or may not decide not to share about that tried to stop me from coming. I took off at 2 o'clock today from my job, so that I could come up here, show up early, and prepare myself mentally. I just arrived in the parking lot 10 minutes before I spoke. Some things have happened today. My God shows me that I still have what it takes, and that I'm still clean through it all. My husband is at urgent care right now. He's broken his hand. He hit his steering wheel today when somebody robbed his Cash App of $1,000. One of his customers sent it to a Cash App account that we don't have. And in trying to retrieve it, he looked up in a Google number, hit the first number that he saw, and it wasn't Cash App. So he's given all of his business account information to hackers. They took the $1,000, which is, it's a hard pill to swallow, but he'd already paid for the product that he'd already delivered out of his bank account, which was another $600 today. So when I left at 2 o'clock, I had to go to the bank. We had to freeze that account, but it didn't stop me from coming. But when I saw his hand after we took care of everything, I was like, you need to go get that looked at tonight. And so he's there dealing with his broke hand, and I'm here. And y'all, let me tell y'all how my life has changed since I've gotten clean. When I arrived at Narcotics Anonymous, I was jobless and I was homeless. And we had been arrested for some pretty serious manufacturing charges. And this was 2010. And I stumbled upon the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. A friend of mine brought me to my first class. She was attending classes. She had lost her children. And she was like, so the first thing that I want to say about Narcotics Anonymous, my first meeting, number one, I felt accepted. The minute that I walked in the rooms was I felt acceptance. The next thing was that I had a bunch of people just like me that I could relate to. And the first place I truly felt like home in a really long, long time was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And while I was in jail for the charges that we had caught, and many of you know this about my story, I had a 7-year-old little boy that I had carried with me everywhere that I went. Didn't matter where I went, what dope house I went to, what trap house I went to, he was with me. We cooked dope in houses with him present. I remember when DS's came out, I was pretty happy about that because I gave him something to occupy his time while we were getting loaded. And my parents took guardianship of that little boy while I was locked up. And they had every right to do so. I had about 90 days clean. And I was 40 years old, about to be 40, and I found out I was pregnant and didn't have my son. That was very difficult to be in recovery your first year, or my recovery. It was difficult for me to go through that pregnancy. When I told my parents that I was pregnant, they said, "That's just what you need." And that feeling, I'll never forget the feeling and the disappointment of number one, letting my family down. I'll never forget the feeling of my son, who was 7, coming up to the Lone Oak County Jail and seeing us and saying, "Mama, I know you're not a bad person. You just made some bad decisions." My parents had coached him, you know, to tell us that he loved us. And it was so painful at that time. And I was the most emotional addict I've ever seen in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I've never seen anybody like me since then. I cried, and I want to say I cried like a bitch for the first entire year of my recovery. And maybe hormones had a part to play in that. I don't know. But I had my son weeks early on in August of 2011. He was a healthy baby boy, and he was 7 weeks early. That little boy is 14 years old today, and he is hell on wheels. He is the perfect storm of both me and his father. He got the worst parts of both of us blended up in one tiny human being, and we love him dearly. You know, my judge was Barbara Elmore for my son, and I'd go to court. You know, I had to take a hair follicle test not long after getting clean. I think it was about 90 days they gave me, and I took a hair follicle test, and y'all, that test didn't come back clean. And I thought to myself, well, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And, you know, y'all told me that if I just keep putting one foot in front of the other, eventually my test would be clean, and the next test was clean. Didn't mean I got my son back. I had a baby, but I didn't have my son. And that 7-year-old could not understand why his brother could be with mom and dad and he could not. You know, the way he recalls it, he was a senior in high school and he had to write a paper. And it was about mom and dad. And y'all heard me say I went to Lone Oak County Jail, right? Was in there for a week, it sucked. In his paper, he talked about how his parents went to prison. That's how he recalls it. Like, we were in prison, and we were gone for a really long time. But, you know, as a 7-year-old little boy, we were probably gone from his life for a really long time, and we were. 2.5 years after I lost my son, my father gave him back to me. You know, I had been in the program 4 years when the Living Clean book came out. It was 2014. And I couldn't afford that book yet. And I had a lady that had moved to Cabot. She was from California. She was like, "You have got to read this book." You know, I told you I cried the first year. Well, year four wasn't any different. I was still in the rooms complaining about my mom and this volatile relationship that I had with her, and why couldn't she see that I was clean, right? Like I was doing all of the things that NA asked me to do. But I'll tell you, every time she opened her mouth, I fought back, and I fought like hell. Well, that lady from California bought me that copy of The Living Clean, and she said, "I want you to skip all the first chapters, and I want you to go start with the chapter on relationships." And then I had a sponsor at the time who, I think I might have been on the second round of steps. And she said, "You know, Patty, you don't have to entertain every fight that you're invited to." That was eye-opening for me, because me and my mom had that type of relationship that every time we got together, it turned into an argument and a fight. And I was trying to be a different person. I just didn't know how to be. And so it was about my 4-year mark, maybe my 5-year mark. I'm trying to rebuild relationships with my sibling and my family, right? And my dad goes in for a routine hip replacement surgery. And 24 hours later, he starts to have cardiac trouble. And he ended up on a ventilator. And at that time, they asked me, or asked my family, how long has your dad had congestive heart failure? And I'm like, he doesn't have congestive heart failure. But they're like, yeah, he does. He does now. And I remember bartering with God at that time, because I hadn't been a very good daughter, even in recovery. Like, I kept my parents, like, I was still angry with them for taking my son. I was still angry at my parents for the charges that we caught, because my parents had us arrested. You know, my dad was a military man. I grew up with both of my parents in my household. They were normal. My dad was a jet engine mechanic, and he was the flight line supervisor on the Little Rock Air Force Base when we moved here. And, you know, we had had a bunch of chaos that surrounded us because we were addicts. And my parents could never really put their finger on what it was that was wrong in our life. You know, we hid it pretty good until we didn't hide it very good anymore. And I put some crushed epiphedrine powder in my dad's grill. And I had told my husband to make sure he went out there and got that. He thought, you know, my dad interrupted that conversation, you know, and at that time was 2010, and we were at the end of our using. We didn't know we were at the end of our using, but we were at the end of our using. Because at that point, I gave up my home in Ward, Arkansas, because we owed a pretty significant debt to some dope men, and we didn't want to pay them. And I was sleeping with a gun that I took from my father's house, and I didn't even know how to use it, but I was sleeping with it for protection. And so when it came time to pay rent, I was like, well, let's just not pay rent, and they won't know where to find us. I think about the way that I used to think before I got here and how I think today, you know, it's night and day difference. Like, you guys have taught me how to have clarity in my thoughts and in my decisions. This program has given me a life that if I had planned myself some goals in the very beginning, I'd have way shortchanged myself. I'm going to skip over a whole bunch of it. You know, and there are some things that I did in my active addiction. We burn a house down cooking dope and didn't get caught. You know, it's part of the police and the firemen don't really know what they're looking for. Not really. Because by everything that we had, we should have gotten caught and we should be in prison. I wouldn't have my son. He would have been adopted out, because that's what was happening to all of my girlfriends and their children, because they lost them permanently. But this recovery journey, working the steps, finding a sponsor, you know, there was a lot of things that I was willing to do that the program talked about, and there were things that I wasn't willing to do in the beginning, you know. But eventually, everything that y'all were sharing with me, it was all up here, but eventually it moved down to my heart. And I, you know, a year after my father had that episode, he recovered from that hip episode with congestive heart failure. And I made a promise to myself, not to my family, but I made a promise to myself that I would start being the daughter, the sister, the friend, everything that I was supposed to be. Right. And so the next year I had this beautiful journey. We planned a vacation that me and my husband paid for out of our own pockets. My family didn't pay for it for us. Like, we went on our first real vacation, and we went to Wisconsin to the Dells, and we went to the Mall of America. We went to Milwaukee. We went to the Harley Davidson Museum. You know, that was a beautiful summer. My dad came back. He tore up his deck. He built a new deck. He redid the roof on the house. He did a whole bunch of stuff. And about 40 days after that vacation, my dad passed away. He had both of my boys at the movies, and he had an active heart attack at the movies. My brother was the emergency room nurse at Baptist. My dad started having chest pain, just walks in. He's like, hey, son, you probably need to check me out. My dad never recovered. That was a very difficult time in my life. I checked out of recovery. I checked out of life. And if you're in a storm like that, it'll eventually come back to you. You know, I needed to grieve. I had to grieve that loss. And then I had to accept that loss. And I had to be grateful for the year that I was the daughter that I was always supposed to be. I had to be grateful for the fact that my dad got to see me clean and got to see me provide for myself, because he had provided for me my entire life. Today, I manage a long-term care facility in Cabot for special needs individuals, and I have 10 residents that I care for who have special needs. And I'm just going to share with you all the chaotic week and let y'all decide, like, I'm still clean today. I got a call Friday. You know, one of the relationships I got to restore was to my best girlfriend that I ever had. In my using, I picked a fight with her because I didn't want her to be in my life anymore. And she was a goodie. She was a good friend. She was a genuine friend. But I didn't want to have to hide that shit, and I broke it off with her as a friend. And so didn't talk to her for many, many, many years. And she had moved off to Ohio, so it made it a little bit easier for me to not have that relationship, right? And years later, I'm clean. I'm living in Cabot. Me and Harley have started cleaning up the wreckage of our past. Harley's my husband. Sorry, I just outed him like that. But we started cleaning up the wreckage of our past, and I discover Facebook and found my long-lost friend. Well, we reconnected. She forgave me. She understands my disease. She is grateful to have me back in her life, and I am blessed that she accepted me back after everything that I did. She calls me this weekend, and her grandmother that raised her is on hospice, and she's nearing the end of her life. And I was like, well, just keep me posted. She lives in Pea Ridge. And Monday, I got the call that she had hours left to live. Monday at work, I felt just sick. There's a crud going around. I felt so sick. I got a sore throat, a runny nose. My nose was literally leaking water. And I said to myself, do I go up there sick or do I stay home at that moment? I'd already taken off work for Tuesday and Wednesday. I made the decision to go and be sick and help her because she was the caregiver in her home of her grandmother. And I get there and I was taking some night shift, and Lord, I thought Grandma was going to pass on me on a night shift and that she was going to hold that against me. We had some really low, rough patches. Grandma has passed. It was nothing to do with my care, but I felt like it had everything to do with my care. I returned home Wednesday, just feeling all kinds, still sick, kind of sickly, had to go to work Thursday. I managed those 10 clients that I told you were special needs. I have an elopement on Thursday. Never had one in my past. Never even seen one, heard about one happening. And this guy takes off. I have to call 911, and I have to report him missing. I have to call his family and tell him that he's gone, and we don't know where he's at. And anyways, the Cabot police found him and brought him back to us. I had to call and get permission from every family of every person that we have there to get alarms installed on the door. We don't take away rights until there's a need. And then when we do something, every person has to be in agreement. So I took care of that this morning, and we have new alarms, and I feel so good about that. But I got there this morning, and one of my people was on the ground. My nurse was trying to get her up. My overnight staff was trying to get her up. She just couldn't stand. She's nonverbal, and we couldn't get her on her feet. She just kept going down on the ground, down on the ground. We rolled her out to the van to get her on there because they go to a day program. She couldn't stand up to get on the van, so I put her back in the transport chair and said, y'all just go on. She can stay home today, right? She's in CCU tonight with sepsis and pneumonia. So is it a miracle that I'm here today? It is. My husband's got a broken hand, the shit show with the cash. I woke up this morning to a note that our friend Hunter died last night, overdosed after having clean time. My sponsee Sadie dated Hunter for 9 years. I've had an emotional day. But I'm here to share the message that there is recovery is alive and that we never have to use again. I got through this entire week and everything that I did, including, you know, coming here today and having four deer jump out in front of me, and I can't make this stuff up. And I didn't have to use. I didn't have to use. You know, today, I was with my husband for 10 years in active addiction. We were the worst couple that y'all could have ever imagined to each other. There was some kind of infidelity there. There was belittling. There was just verbal abuse. We were very toxic. Having this little boy trying to cook dope, trying to be using addicts, trying to keep our supply and never run out. And then the charges halted all of that. In recovery, piece by piece, put us back together and turned us into these loving, amazing, caring human beings. And 12 years into our clean time, we decided that we were finally going to get married. So I'd been with him now 22 years. And we had the most beautiful wedding. I paid for it. I didn't charge any of it, like I paid cash for it. And it was a blessing in my life. Now, some things have changed in our relationship, and I felt some betrayal. I have felt some dishonesty. I have felt a lot of things that I have gone through here in the last couple of years. But you know what I clung to? The fellowship, my sponsor, the sisterhood of ladies who are in my life today to help me walk through this journey, no matter what it looks like. Because at the end of the day, he's a loving man. He's a good father. He's a good provider. And he treats me like the queen that I never thought possible. I mean, our life just looks a little bit different today, and he's just not, you know, doing NA anymore. And that was heartbreaking in itself. And, you know, there's a lot to be said that I've clung. You know, when they asked me, I was like, God, what do I have to say? What do I have to offer? I feel so inadequate at times. And the longer that I stay clean, the quieter I get because my anxiety level rises to the occasion. And usually, even at a meeting, once people start looking at me and start trying to listen to what I have to say, I shut down. Okay, I'm done sharing at that moment. And I just stop. Thank you for letting me share. I've had some mental health issues along the way, as many of us do. And I know mental health is an outside issue, but for me, it's an inside issue because if I don't take care of one, I'm not going to take care of the other. Yep. You know, mental health is such a crisis in recovery that we have come up with literature to help everyone understand. And I have had to take some antidepressants. I had to have some anxiety medication at times. And I was so thankful when I was able to stop taking that stuff because it made me feel some kind of a way. But there are times that we need that medication. There are times of illness. I have learned about many different illnesses since I've been clean. I developed gastroparesis after I had my gallbladder removed and I was using Ozempic. And I was throwing up every day. My bowels were not moving. And I threw up every day for a year. And I was only consuming protein shakes, you know, those little Premier shakes. And I was stopping by the nutrition huts. I was just trying to get well. I went to see the witch doctor in Rosebud, the daughter who's now running the place, to try to get some healing. And I don't know which piece of what I was doing fixed me, but I was going to the chiropractor. I was having him adjust my spine. I was taking these drops that the witch doctor's daughter gave me, trying to make myself well. And somewhere along the way, even at my own wedding, I could not eat, and I was still in the middle of that gastroparesis, and it was terrible, y'all. I thought it was going to kill me, but I survived it, and I'm on the other side of that. You know, like, we go through things clean, and I didn't use. Like, that's the miracle of our program, is that it doesn't matter what I've been through, what path of journey I've walked, is that I have done all of this, and I've done it clean. You know, it hasn't always been easy. I think about the journey of all of the friends that I've found in here. When you have been in the rooms of narcotics long enough, you're eventually going to have people show up that you used with. Mm-hmm. It's happened to me about a dozen times. I used to think that there was no way that everybody in the rooms was really truly clean, as happy as everybody was. There was just no possible way that everybody could be clean. But what I've learned is that it is possible. I'm a living, breathing testimony. And that we all have a story, and our things might look a little different. You know, our journeys took different paths. You know, but, you know, I've also, this last year has been a year of something that I've never done my whole recovery. I thought I was meditating, prayer and meditation, right? I truly meditate today. And I learned to do that. I put on, my husband, it drives him nuts, it's the sounds of the universe.
Yes.
And I put that on, and I just get quiet, and I get really still. And the truth be known, I can sit like that all freaking day long and never be bothered. But, you know, today I am a wife. Today I am a mother. I work 12-hour days Monday through Friday most days. So I'm still at 55 years old, putting in 60 hours a week. And I still go home and cook dinner for my family. And I still am a sponsor. I have, you know, a multitude of sponsees. I coined two of them this week on Wednesday night for 11 and 13 years. And, you know, it's always an honor anytime somebody asks you to be their sponsor. I have a sponsor. I'd like to tell you that I utilize her often. I will tell you that I utilize her at the beginning of a storm now, not at the end. Because those of you that know me know that in my past, in my journey with my sponsors, I would suffer, y'all. I would suffer through the shit. And when I got to the other side, I would call them and tell them all about it. It didn't work very well for me. But today, as things begin to happen, I usually pick up the phone and I call my sponsor to let her know what is happening with me today so that she can be there for me. And you know, there's somebody like that for every person in this room if you're willing to utilize them. And it's been a hell of a week. I haven't had a week like this, I don't know, in my entire recovery. Maybe the week that I lost my dad. It's been rough. When I tell y'all, I didn't think the universe wanted me to come. Y'all saw all the things that I've dealt with trying to get here today. But I didn't think about using, not one time. Not one time did the thought cross my mind, as I know how to stop this chaos. Because I used to use to calm my nerves. I used to use when I was happy. Let there be a blizzard, I was going to town. Didn't care. There was often blizzards in my car. You know, we'd put an envelope of shit in the glove box and turn the air on and it'd come flying. It happened. You know, and I think about how different my life is. I told y'all I came in homeless. And little by little, we chop away at the old bills that we had, the old restitutions, everybody that we had to pay. I no longer pay the sheriff's department for shit. I don't owe them a dime. They don't get any of my hard-earned money, none of it. That money goes to my family. It goes to myself. It goes to, you know, if I want to buy something, I usually just go buy it. But the state doesn't get any more of it for doing bad behavior. So that was a change. And the other change is that somewhere along the way, I went and got a checking account. I might have had 5 years clean. Like, it took me a really long time to get that checking account. But I remember how proud I was that I could walk into a bank and open up that account, because I had abused many accounts. And I wasn't even sure that I wasn't on some list somewhere. But when I went in, they gave me one. And so what that checking account did for me is it gave me a debit card, and I started paying all my stuff. And y'all taught us that if we go get us even a used car and we make payments on that car, that eventually we could get us a new car. And I did just that. Like, y'all taught me that, and I did just that. And then I think that first car was a 2017, and 2 years later, I signed my name on a house that said Patricia. My significant other was not on that. I went to the bank, and I bought that house that I grew up in. The same house that I got arrested at, the same house where I put the stuff out in the barbecue grill. My mom was living on that land, and she couldn't care for it anymore. It was an acre and a half. And I'll tell you, the house was built in 86. It still needs some work, and I tried to do some work, and I've kind of got it in shambles. But, you know, we're still plugging away, trying to get that house exactly where we want it. And one day we'll have it there, right? Like, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that God blessed me enough to see me fulfill that dream, because I wouldn't have put that as one of my goals, owning a house. Are you kidding me? I wouldn't have put that as a goal of mine ever, because I didn't think that I could achieve that goal. Yet here I am, and I've achieved that goal. Let me think about something else. What else? You know, my favorite thing to do, and I don't mean anything against the men, but we have this women's retreat. And for any women in here who have never been a part of a women's retreat, I'm just going to tell you to go do it. You know, there's a men's retreat too. And my first women's retreat, I don't know if any of y'all remember Miss Betty. Betty was a nurse who used to go to meetings in Little Rock, and she moved to Jacksonville, and she started coming to Cabot. And Betty had registered for this women's retreat, and my sponsor told me that if I wanted her to be my sponsor, that I was going to have to go to this retreat. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll go. The week came of the retreat, and I got this wild idea that I wasn't going to go. And I shared that with my significant other. So I'm not going. He's like, but you already paid your $50. $50? I've pissed $50. I didn't care. I was like, I'm not going to go be around a bunch of women at some retreat. And he was making me feel bad because he was going to this men's retreat in Mississippi. And he would come back, and he had all these amazing stories about the amazing time and the brotherhood. And he could not convince me to go. But where Miss Betty comes into this picture was that very week, Betty calls me and she says, how are you getting there? I said, driving my vehicle in case I need to run. She said, Patty, I just got this new car. It was a Grand Marquis. She said, and I can't drive it. Why don't you drive it for me? She's like, you can take us. And I said, okay. And when I hung the phone up, I was like, oh, God. What did I just do? Like, I made a commitment. And what y'all taught me in recovery is that we don't back out of our commitments. There are some ladies here tonight who were at my first women's retreat, and this is what happened to me when I got there. Was these ladies knew each other. They had been friends for a long time. And I sat my ass in a corner watching, wishing to be a part of what I saw happening in that room. All the hugs, the laughters, the everything that was happening, and I was just observing. Terrified, like a little kid, right? Like a little kid, I was terrified. And Friday night, I just sat there alone, feeling so alone, because even in a room full of people, there are times that we can feel so alone and isolated. And I went to bed that night. Well, everybody went to bed. I didn't go to bed. I stayed up at that house. Tried to prop myself up in the chair, and I didn't want to go to bed. And I'll tell you why I didn't want to go to bed, because Harley told me that I snored. And I didn't want to keep people up, so I didn't sleep. So day number two rolls around, and they had this whole itinerary plan. Some of them probably knew what was going to happen, but I didn't know what was going to happen. And we did this thing, and it was called the paired walk, right? Where they draw names, then two people go, and they take off on this walk, and then they talk about their hopes, their dreams, their fears, and then we come back at a certain time, and you can share about the experience, what you learned about the other party, how it relates to your story, whatever you wanted to share, right? And so I was praying to God, please don't make me get up. I can't even do this. Like, y'all can't even walk, because at that time, that pregnancy that I had put 100 pounds on this body, and I carried that weight for a really long time. And so I was ashamed of myself and my appearance. I was embarrassed. You know, I told you I didn't want to be there, and now they're going to pair me with a woman. And we're supposed to go share. And I was still batshit crazy. Like, I was still a little bit on the, you can tell she's an addict side. And I want y'all to know there were two names left in the bucket. It was mine and another lady's. They waited till the very end. Everybody was gone, so I didn't have to stand up in front of everybody. And that was my God taking care of me, because he knew that I might not have done it, you know. And I got paired with a lady named Linda, okay, for my very first paired walk. Linda let me throw up on her for just about the whole time, and I got to tell her all my trash. And Lord, I don't even know how Linda was in the rooms, because she just looked like a saint to me. Linda still looks like a saint to me. The tables have quite turned, and I sponsor her. She just got 30 years clean. That journey has been a beautiful journey. Linda sent me a message today, and she says, in the middle of all the chaos that I have, she's like, do you think you can call me tonight? I couldn't call her and tell her, yes, I can call you, and I hurry up and send her a text, yes. And I thought to myself on my leisurely drive at 2 o'clock that I would give Linda a call and get here and have time to, you know, de-escalate, and I would have time to do all of the things that I wanted to do. It just wasn't in my cards to have it happen that way. But Linda talked to me while I cried all the way here, feeling inadequate and not knowing what kind of a message I was going to share with you guys, because I didn't have time to prepare. I didn't have time to study. I didn't have time to make note cards. And not that I'd have done that shit anyways. You know, my story's in here. And I don't know, I did not know what God was going to have me share with y'all today. I can tell you that Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. It continues to save my life every single day. While I might not get to a meeting every single day, I do something for my recovery every single day.
That's right.
I pray, I meditate, I generally talk to another addict, I get in my literature. And God, I love my meetings still to this day. I love being able to carry the message, because in Cabot we have a room full of newcomers. You know, we don't always see the old timers. And, you know, we have that duty, that obligation to carry that message. And I don't get to keep what I have without giving it all away. I prefer to share to the newcomer, because they don't know me and they're not going to judge me. And I don't know why I still have that hang up and feel like that's what's going to happen when I get up in front of a room full of people and speak, but I still feel like that's what's going to happen. You know, I thank you guys for laughing at some of the things that I've shared tonight. It's not easy to get up here and just pour your heart out to tell you what I've done. You know, I don't know why I stayed clean, because I've lived through some very terrible times in recovery. I heard it shared at a convention one time, and this is probably the best analogy that I can ever have, is that our life is like a candle. Sometimes it's burning so very brightly, and we are on fire for recovery, right? And there are things that happen in our life, and our candle's just barely flickering. And there's nobody in charge of igniting our fire except us. Mm-hmm. You can't get it from another human being as bad as we might want it. I have had depression in my recovery. You know, I have isolated myself in recovery. I have done a lot of things in my journey that I really don't like to share about. The only thing that I've done right that I can tell you is that I didn't put it in my hand, and I haven't put it in my body. That's the only thing that I've done right. Everything else is kind of, you know, the ebb and the flow thing, and I don't go to the places. I don't go to the barbershop because I know if I show up at the barbershop, I'm going to get a haircut. If I go to the dope man's house, I'm going to get high, and I don't care how much clean time I have. You know, last night my friend made the decision. He was living in the Chem-Free at Next Step up there in Clarksville. He knew this way of life. He got married up there. He made a decision last night that took his life. The saddest part about that is he has a son who's 15. The mama died 3 years ago, so he's orphaned. You know, I don't think that there's anything in this planet that will make me want to use again. I know the stakes are high. I know what's out there today, too, is killing our brothers and sisters every single day. I hope I never feel like I'm not a part of this fellowship, ever. Because y'all loved me first. You loved me when I didn't love myself. Y'all allowed me to mold myself. And my first sponsor, who relapsed not long after I got here, told me the one thing, and I didn't believe it at that time. She said, Patty, is the beautiful thing about recovery is that I don't care what you want to be when you grow up. If you dream it, you can achieve it. Whatever lady you want to be like, you go get close to that lady. If you've got a lady out there and she's doing all of the things, go get close to her. Because I listen to those cliches. I listen to hang out with the winners. And in the beginning of all of our journeys, we don't know who the winners are. We think that we might know. We, you know, come to meetings early, and sometimes we stay late, and sometimes we go out to dinner, and then sometimes we find out who the winners are and who the losers are. And I hate to say it in that manner, but not everybody was trying to do what I was trying to do. And I do want to tell y'all that I never planned or intended on staying in recovery. I didn't plan or intend on staying in Narcotics Anonymous. I was going to do it long enough to get that monkey off my back. That was it. I had a plan. When my son was returned to my care, I was going to move states away, rebuild my life, do what we did, get high as I wanted to get. Like, oh, yeah, I think about my thought process then and what it is today. I don't know if you got anything out of anything that I shared, but if I can do it, you can do it too, and that's all I've got. Amen.